Good afternoon, everyone. My name's Ian McLaughlin, and I'm an attorney with the Public Health Law and Policy Program in Oakland, California. And I'm going to be talking about some of the legal considerations that you'll want to take into account when you're trying to craft some legislation to tax sugar-sweetened beverages. Like many attorneys, I have no relationships to disclose here today. As Marjorie said in the introduction, I'm with Public Health Law and Policy, but I work for the National Policy and Legal Analysis Network to Prevent Childhood Obesity. We go by our acronym NPLAN. We're a project that's funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and we're essentially a team of attorneys, and so we come at a lot of these issues from the legal side. And we are involved in the policy as well, but what we try and do is do research into legal issues that are implicated by those policies, and to try and create legal tools that can be used by different communities at the local level and the state level to effectuate those policies in a meaningful way. That's model ordinances, model state laws, toolkits, fact sheets that explain that, legal research summaries, that sort of thing. So when we come at a policy issue like sugar-sweetened beverage taxes from the legal side, we really look at it from two different angles. One is, do you have the authority to do what you want to do? Do you have the legal authority to levy the tax, for example? And then the second thing, which I'll spend the bulk of my time talking about, is assuming that you do have the authority to do what you want to do, how can you craft your legislation in order to make that work for you? But first, to back up and talk about the authority, the legal authority, in this context, we're talking about the power to levy a tax overall. And the good news is that the power is really broad, actually, at the state level to levy a tax, and this kind of tax is no exception. States have broad authority that is limited really only by the federal government. Has the federal government preempted what you want to do? Or is there a constitutional principle such as equal protection or due process that might be violated by your tax? The government has not preempted state or local sugar-sweetened beverage taxes, so that's not really an issue. And it's not very difficult to craft your tax law so that it doesn't violate any of these constitutional principles. I imagine that it could be done, you know, if you wanted to levy a tax on PepsiCo products but not Coca-Cola products. That might be an equal protection problem, but I haven't seen that kind of proposal, so it's really not hard to get around, and I think that states have really broad authority, so it's not an issue. Local governments, such as cities and counties, on the other hand, are a bit more constrained. Cities and counties have the power to tax, really only the power that is granted to them by the state that they're in. And the states are really all over the map on this, but I think they fall really into two broad categories. One is states that require cities and counties to get specific authority from the state for each type of tax that they want to levy. There are a number of states like this, and they have no real power to tax unless the state has granted them the specific power to tax. Obviously, that's a little bit more difficult in states like that than in the second category of states, like California, which is the state I'm most familiar with. In states like that, the state government has granted relatively broad authority to levy a certain type of tax. In California, for example, it's a business license tax, which is a type of excise tax. And cities and counties can levy that kind of tax on almost any product or service, so long as they do so following the proper procedures. In California, you have to go to the vote of the people. So the power to tax, I don't want to spend any more time on this, except to say that if you're trying to tax at the state level, you have relatively broad authority. And if you're trying to tax at the local level, your city or county, then you really have to be aware of what kind of tax you can do, what kind of authority you've been granted by the state. And those of you in the audience who have been through this at the local level really know that that can be a little tricky. Assuming that you have the authority to levy the tax, and I'm going to spend the bulk of my time talking about how to create the type of legislation that you want that will be effective. And this is a lot of what we do as attorneys. This is what legislative counsel do and city attorneys and county council, corporation counsel. We try and take the ideas of policymakers, which are ideas, and we've heard a lot from Dr. Brownell and Dr. Chiluka today about what might make a really effective sugar-sweetened beverage tax policy. We take those ideas and we try and put them down on paper so that they, one, actually effectuate what you want to do, and two, they're clear enough so that they're enforceable, so that the industry knows what they have to do, so that we're able to work with them. So we have created some model state-level sugar-sweetened beverage tax legislation at NPLAN, and really we identified four real pressure points that there are a lot of policy implications and a lot of policy decisions involved with these 4 points. One we've heard a little bit about already: what type of tax are you going to levy, and how are you going to impose that, at what level of intervention? Because we really want to impose it in a way that's going to ensure a price increase, which, as we've heard, is a really important component in reducing consumption. The second issue is how to define the beverages and the syrups that are subject to the tax. The third is administration and enforcement issues that I'll talk about briefly. Those can be kind of tricky, and just in the past year that we've been working on this, a number of issues have been identified that we're grappling with now. And the fourth, which has also been touched on, is how can you write an earmarking provision into your law? As I said, in M-Plan, we have some model sugar-sweetened beverage tax legislation, and a lot of these things that I'm talking about, these four elements that I'm going to go through one by one, are in that legislation with comments and more detailed analysis. The first issue that I want to talk about, and has already been discussed by both Drs. Brunel and Chulupka, is what kind of tax you're going to levy. And we've been talking mainly about two types of taxes. And the first is a sales tax. As has been said, almost every state in the nation has a sales tax on the books already, and a number of them, a majority of them actually, already include sugar-sweetened beverages or sodas or soft drinks within their sales tax to a certain extent. Sales taxes, I think you're all familiar with. They are imposed on consumers at the point of purchase. So they're measured as an ad valorem tax as a percentage of the sales price. So you see a receipt here, and when you go to check out and you bring all your items off the shelf and you bring them up to the counter and you're going to pay for them, you'll get a big receipt like this that shows what the tax rate is for the sales tax. In this case, it's a 6% sales tax. And there will also be a number of items on your receipt, and some of them will be marked as taxable and some of them will be marked as tax exempt. You see here that I've circled duct tape, which is a taxable item under whatever state this is. And it's a calculation that's done based on the price of the taxable items and the percentage of the tax wherever you are. So I think we've heard that sales taxes can be less effective as a public health intervention, primarily because they're imposed at the point of purchase. So when you go to the shelf to purchase your sugar-sweetened beverage, you won't notice a higher price, even though when you ultimately pay for it at the cash register, it is a higher price. But because you don't know that when you take it off the shelf, it might not affect your purchasing decision. One thing I want to say about it, though, is that several states recently have been looking at increasing their sales tax on sugar-sweetened beverages as a way to raise revenue. It's more difficult and impossible in some states to earmark the revenue from the sales tax to differentiate it from the other products that are subject to the sales tax. But if you're in one of those states, like Dr. Brunel mentioned, that is looking to raise revenue, since every state already has a sales tax on the book, it's not tremendously difficult to amend that in order to include sugar-sweetened beverages at the full sales tax rate. In fact, you probably don't even need a separate full piece of legislation. What you need is a piece of legislation to amend your existing sales tax. The other broad category of taxes that we've all been talking about here today are excise taxes. An excise tax, it's a really broad term. It's a term that encompasses almost every kind of tax besides income taxes, property taxes, sales taxes, and poll taxes. So it can be used very broadly to encompass almost every kind of tax. And it can also be used to refer to a specific type of tax, like we've been talking about here, which is a tax imposed on the act or the business selling a particular tangible good. An excise tax is a very common product-specific tax. Most of the tobacco taxes are excise taxes, gasoline taxes as well. And one of the promising public health effects of an excise tax is that, indeed, it often leads to an increase in the shelf price of the good that's taxed, which will affect the purchasing decision. There are several ways to impose an excise tax. Ad valorem is one, probably not as effective as we just heard, but you can also impose it per ounce or by volume of beverage, or based on sugar content as well. The type of tax that you impose has a big effect on where you can impose it in the distribution chain as well. This is a very simplified graph that I put together trying to show the complicated distribution chain of sugar-sweetened beverages from manufacturer on down to when you purchase it at the store. And a sales tax can really only be imposed on the retailer at the point of purchase. When the consumer makes a purchase from a retailer, that's really where a sales tax is imposed every time. Excise taxes, on the other hand, can be imposed almost at any point along the entire spectrum. If you wanted to impose it at the retail level, you could do that. Or you could also impose it at the manufacturer level if you had jurisdiction in your state over the manufacturer. The way that we have it in our model legislation that we produced at NPLAN is to impose the excise tax at the bottler or the distributor wholesale level, which seems to be the most efficient in most cases because most states have jurisdiction over those entities because they're within the state, and there are not as many of those as there are retailers. Another thing that we've heard is that regardless of what kind of tax you're going to impose, a real public health benefit only comes if you increase the price of the product, which will lead to a reduction in consumption. So the real question for us when we're thinking about this legally is, how can we structure the tax to make sure that it increases the price of the product on the shelf? We've heard that the tobacco tax example, excise taxes are almost always passed along and almost always lead to an increase in the shelf price. So we know that excise taxes are more effective than sales taxes for some of the reasons we just said. But what happens if we impose an excise tax here and the industry just absorbs the tax or spreads it across different products? I don't think we can say with any certainty what would happen with the sugar-sweetened beverage excise tax. This might be a possibility. So how can we ensure that it will increase the shelf price? Well, we haven't come up with many great ways to do that, but one way goes back to tobacco taxes, and this is not uncommon in tobacco tax laws. A lot of states, in fact, most states tax tobacco products on the first sale or something like that within the state, and the first sale almost always occurs at the distributor level or the wholesale level. So it's like what I was talking about with the sugar-sweetened beverages. The tax is imposed higher than the retailer at the wholesaler or the distributor. But then a lot of states also include language in their tobacco tax laws that requires that tax be passed along from the distributor or the wholesaler down to the consumer. And we've been looking at this, and other groups have been looking at this, the Rudd Center, of course, and the Center for Science and the Public Interest have been looking about whether or not this is feasible in the sugar-sweetened beverage context, and it looks like it is. So this might be the best way that's been identified so far in order to ensure that the tax is passed along to the consumer and actually leads to an increase in the shelf price. Okay, I'd like to move along quickly to the next issue that we've really grappled with in crafting legislation to tax sugar-sweetened beverages. And actually, over the last year that I've been working on this, this has proven to be the most difficult part of any piece of legislation is, how are you going to define what kind of beverages are subject to the tax? The taxes have been talked about, sales taxes, the existing sales taxes, and the smaller number of existing excise or license taxes are not really consistent in the way they define them. Sodas used, soft drinks used a lot, or maybe it's a carbonated beverages, defined in different ways in existing laws. In our model legislation, we've defined the beverages subject to the tax as any beverage that has any amount of added caloric sweetener. From a public health standpoint, that's what we think is the proper starting point. If it has any amount of added caloric sweetener or sugar in there, then it's subject to the tax. Obviously, this treats products that are very different in the same way, unless you tax by ounce of sugar in the product. So if you do it by volume and you say any beverage that has any amount of added caloric sweetener is going to be taxed at 1 cent per ounce, then if you have a very small amount of sugar in the beverage or a very large amount of sugar in the beverage, they're taxed the same. Juices have been a particular problem in our model legislation. We say that only 100% natural fruit and vegetable juices are exempt, but a lot of different places, states, and localities are defining that differently. And there are some other policy decisions that you might want to exempt certain beverages from your tax law. To keep moving along quickly, the other component of defining the beverages subject to the tax is defining how you're going to do, is how you're going to define syrups and powders that are subject to the tax. We think in our model legislation, it includes all syrups that have any amount of added caloric sweetener, again. And the most common type of syrup that we know about that you're all familiar with is a syrup that's used in a fountain to produce a fountain drink when it's mixed with water at the point of when you put your cup underneath there. But in the last year, lots of people have been coming up with a lot of different questions. There are a lot more syrups than just that. And what happens about the types of syrups that are not necessarily intended to be used in a fountain and are maybe intended to be used at home or in a smaller business like Torani syrups, which are used in Italian sodas in small cafes, or Hershey syrup, which is used to make chocolate milk in your home. Kool-Aid powder, which is one of my favorites from my childhood, but it's a powder that's used to make a sugar-sweetened beverage typically in your home. And this is one that just occurred to me over the weekends. What about snow cone syrup? That's 100% sugar. Is a snow cone even a beverage or not? Eventually it turns into one if it melts. But it doesn't start out that way. Quickly, some administration and enforcement issues. Basically, all states and large local governments already administer and collect taxes, so there should be an existing system that you can tap right into, but it's important to work with those agencies that are already administering your taxes in your state or your city to make sure that they are able to do so. Some additional issues to consider is, how are you going to identify all the taxpayers in your state or your city? That can be tough sometimes, especially if you're trying to identify all the retailers, because there's a large number of retailers. Once you've identified them, we think that a licensing or a permitting system is a good way to keep track of them going forward. And an added benefit of that is that using a licensing or a permitting system, you can use that in the future to enforce other requirements you might want to impose on those retailers or those sellers of sugar sweetened beverages. Another issue I went over briefly is the syrups, and how can you calculate the tax on the syrups? Those are almost all sugar, so in a lot of ways, if you're using a per ounce tax for bottled beverages, you do probably want to consider a tax on syrups that's per concentration of sugar, which will more accurately capture the harm that they're doing. And then there are some substantive requirements that might come up with your tax legislation, such as, if you require that the tax be passed on to the consumer, how are you going to monitor that? So whatever requirements you put in your legislation, it's important to keep in mind that those are going to have to be enforced, and you're going to have to figure out how to enforce them if you want to do that. And since I'm just about up, I will just briefly mention about earmarking tax proceeds. We've heard about it already from the previous two presenters. From a public health standpoint, we think this could be an enormously positive public health intervention, because we have a very good feeling that these taxes are going to reduce consumption, and if they raise the price enough, that they will reduce consumption. But one thing we know about all taxes is that they raise money, and what you do with that money can have a real positive public health impact. The best way to earmark the proceeds so that you're sure that they stay where you want them to be is to segregate them from the general fund, track them, monitor the fund, and have some accountability and reportability on how those are used. You can really think very broadly on what you want to use the earmarked proceeds for. There's really no limit here. These are some examples, and these reflect what's in our model legislation. But you really can use it for almost anything you want, and you can even direct the earmarked funds towards the most vulnerable communities in your city, or your county, or your state. One other resource I want to mention before I get off the stage here is that we've heard that there are about 20 proposals for sugar-sweetened beverage taxes at the state and local level this last year, and the Rudd Center has their legislative database, which is great. We have one more product to supplement that a little bit, which is a chart comparing all of the select legislation that was introduced in 2010. Comparing different aspects of that, such as which beverages are subject to the tax, what kind of tax was it, where was it imposed, and what point of the distribution chain. So it's in a chart form. It's not on our website, but I'll put my contact information up here at the end, and if you want to receive a copy, you can get in touch with me. And I think my time is up, so I won't go into proportional pricing or any of the other things. The regulatory fee concept, you might have noticed that the title of the session was Taxes and Fees as a Public Health intervention here. In California, we've used a regulatory fee for many different things. It's slightly different than a tax, and it has several distinct advantages. I only leave this up here to say that on last Tuesday, the California voters approved a ballot proposition that basically eradicated our ability to impose the type of regulatory fee we want to impose on sugar-sweetened beverages. The ballot proposition was funded heavily by the tobacco industry, the oil industry, and the alcohol industry, which don't really want to fess up for all the costs that they have to society. So a regulatory fee is not necessarily off the table. It's not as likely as it was. And with that, I will end, and there's my contact information. Thanks.